Hi, good morning, everyone, and thanks so much for coming. It's a real pleasure to be here. When Jean Downing told me she had to be in Kenya for this and asked me to introduce Curtis in her place, I was very happy to do so. What I do at DAI is manage our whole portfolio of economic growth projects, and one of the best aspects of that job is trying to make connections between projects so that, you know, if we have a really exciting and innovative activity going on in Moldova, we can see how we might be able to adapt that and try it out in Burundi or another country. And one of the projects that I end up talking about the most in making those kinds of comparisons and suggestions is Cambodia MSME. And there's really two reasons for that. First, I really think that it shows that facilitation can work even in the most difficult environments. In the case of Cambodia, it's the private sector is really dominated by a very powerful elite, and yet the MSME project has private sector input and pharmaceutical suppliers competing with each other to offer unsubsidized technical assistance to the value chain participants. So it's very exciting to see a real example of facilitation at work. The second reason is that, and we don't talk about this so much in value chain events and in meetings that we have about the value chain framework, but I think what it really shows is that in some environments, you can have really profound economic and political governance effects from value chain programming, and Curtis is going to spend quite a bit of time today talking about some of those effects. And I really think that in some cases, and Cambodia is a perfect example of this, it can actually be more effective than more traditional approaches to governance. It can be certainly less controversial because you're coming at it from a private sector angle. It can also be more sustainable because it's being driven through commercial markets. Again, I get to talk about Cambodia MSME a lot. I talk about it a lot to my other chiefs of party. And one of the questions they ask me is, well, okay, why? What makes this so successful? And of course, you do sometimes, you know, you talk a lot about the approach and everything, but it also comes back to the people who are working on the project. And Curtis in particular brings some really special attributes to this project that I think have helped a lot. One, his background in business gives him a lot of confidence and insight in how to make markets, harness markets to work for including very poor populations. Second, he brings a huge depth of experience in Southeast Asia, so he's very familiar with the political and economic context in which our value chain participants are working every day. And then finally, there is one other aspect that Curtis didn't really want me to talk about. He doesn't put it on his CV, but Curtis had an early, very successful career in boxing here in the United States, where he was a champion. And while I thought of many bad jokes that I could make about this, knocking out subsidies, taking down regulatory barriers, I think that it actually does become a real source of some of Curtis's real gifts for both strategy and endurance. So with that, I would like to introduce Curtis Hundley, our chief of party for USAID's Cambodia Micro, Small, and Medium Enterprise Project in Cambodia.
Okay, well, that was a few years ago. But yeah, my name is Curtis Hundley, and I'm the COP of the Cambodia Micro, Small, Medium Enterprise Project. I'll only refer to it as MSME from here on. We started in 2005, and we're going to end in September 2012, so we have a few short months left. I've covered a lot of space in 7 years, and I can't cover that much space in the next 30 minutes. But I hope to crystallize some of the important things we've done in the last 7 years to change the culture of business and to change the culture of the way government works with private sector. One of the reasons it works so well is that we've had a lot of latitude from USAID in allowing us to try just about anything we wanted to do. And it's been a very pragmatic project, and also a lot of latitude from DAI and a lot of support. So when we got into a jam, I could call for support. When I wanted to test something out, USAID was quite willing to try it. So how do we do it? The framework is we work with small enterprise. We have about 7,000 clients, somewhere between 10 and 20,000, but 7,000 we've got in our book. That's all we have to have for our requirement from USAID. So we keep track of 7,000. We grow economic space. And once firms have economic space, once they have a commercial excess, they run into all kinds of business barriers, and they need some political space. Cambodia is a country with decreasing economic space, where the elite capture all the economy, and with the decreasing political space, where the elite crush political space. It's one of the reasons USAID liked our project, was that while the government was closing down all the human rights and land rights NGOs that USAID had funded, they were allowing us to bring together 300 or 400 people to engage with the government and advocate for their interests. And that's the last thing we do, is prod civil servants to engage with the private sector. And it is a lot of prodding. We've reached a real plateau now. But we do improve governance. The Civil War ended in 1998. That's when the Khmer Rouge surrendered. So they had about 30 years of war, which literally destroyed all the relationships in the villages. And the Khmer Rouge was very good at destroying trust. So when we started in 2005, we started with a very low plane of trust and very few working relationships. Very few firms were market engaged. Marina Krivoshlikova and I and a number of people from DEI surveyed 30 different value chains to find some that had the potential for growth in a large population across four provinces. And USAID gave us three very poor provinces and one moderately poor province. It's relatively moderately poor, but it's very poor in most terms. It was hard for us to locate any firms with commercial excess. We chose pigs and fish and clay tiles as our three supply value chains to work with in the first 3 years. Government officers operated in command control. They told the private sector what to do, and they hated the private sector and the government didn't talk. They hated each other. They're very predatory. The private sector and the government lacked vision. They lacked confidence, and we had to improve that. Now we work in 17 out of 24 provinces. We can easily calculate that we support about 260,000 beneficiaries all across the spectrum, from very poor to moderately poor to some we've made rich, actually, in some terms, some way, some measure of wealth. We work in 9 value chains: swine, aquaculture, clay tiles, honey, tree resin, ecotourism, safe drinking water, sanitation, and the garment sector. So you can imagine how complex this is. Except in the garment sector, we use the model that we're going to show you, the MSME value chain model that we'll show you today. The garment sector was a little different. That was a follow-on project from another project that the Nathan Group had, and we were given that in our last in the first 2 years of our second project. Our project's also referred as a culture change project in Cambodia because of the culture change that we've had. And one of the reasons is we follow some very basic principles, and our team from the very beginning started following these. There was about $450 million in aid from donors spent in Cambodia since 1993. And when we went out there, you couldn't see any of it in effect. And people weren't starving. They would have one pig, they'd have a little bit of rice, but not $450 million worth of aid. And none of the firms were market linked. They didn't have commercial access. Everybody was working on production, and they weren't working on the supply chain. So you didn't have, and once the donors left, everybody was gone. So in our analysis, we had to ensure that firms had commercial access to commercial markets, and that eventually they could have, if they had access, they would have access. We facilitated. We didn't participate in the supply chain. We didn't act as a go-between. We didn't buy anything. We didn't set prices. We didn't tell people what to charge. All of our activities are very simple. When I present these today, you can say, well, this is just too simple. It can't work. The combination of simplicity was important for us because when we left, and USAID could shut us down any day because they can. It's in the contract, 30 days notice. So that's the way we operated. So we want to make everything really simple so that if we left, the private sector and the government can continue what we're doing without a lot of donor funds. And we wanted to, everything we did, we tried to help as many people in the supply chain as we could and include as many government officers as we could from the very beginning. And our goal is to build relationships. Our project is a relationship-building project. And we build skills and we build knowledge across the supply chain. So we started with a culture of dependence where the first conversation you would have with the private sector would be, what are you going to give us? And we gave them nothing. We never gave pigs away. We never gave fish away. We never dug ponds. We never gave feed away. We never gave technical assistance away, and I'll explain how we do that. What we did give them is vision, and we gave them confidence, and we gave them skills, and we gave them access to markets. So I'm going to quickly run through in this formula, identify the problem we faced and the tools we used. But I'll start a little bit slower on this first slide, and I'll go quicker later because you have to have this fundamental. As I said, they lack confidence. We go into villages, and no one would have ever talked about business. There were a few people that you could see were trying to do business, and we'd walk through a village subjectively, our team would, and the team was like three of us at the time. We'd identify those people who had some entrepreneurial skill and made some investments. We'd invite them to a meeting, and it used to be about 30 people, and we'd invite them to a meeting in somebody's house or at the pagoda, and we just put a piece of butcher block paper up on the wall and say, what are your problems? And they would list the problems were the same in every place you went. It was, I can't get good medicines, 50% of my pigs are dying, 50% of my fish are dying, my fish fingerlings. In the tile business, it was, well, I have to compete with the Vietnamese, and I can only sell my tiles for 2.5 cents. I can't make any money, so I can't grow. They couldn't get any technical assistance because the government didn't offer it. All the donors were spending $50-60 million giving the government money for technical agricultural extension. There wasn't any. I've never seen, in 7 years, I've never seen an agricultural extension agent in Cambodia. They would pay them money, and they would do nothing. So there was nothing sustainable. In most cases, this is the first time these folks ever came together and talked about business. They'd come together because the party had asked them to come together, political party, had asked them to come together. They'd come to meetings like that. But they'd never talked to business together, so it was a real revelation for them to see that him and I have the same problem. And we asked them how they're going to solve it. They said, well, we need technical assistance and we need money. Of course, we weren't going to give them any money and we weren't going to give them any technical assistance. But what we knew, and they also didn't have good products in the local supply stores, the local input suppliers, and the veterinarians didn't have good access to good quality. But in Phnom Penh, there were two companies that had good products imported from France. And we worked for about 3 months to get that company, one of them, to come out and provide a free training using an LCD projector to show them. It was in pigs at the time, and then we moved into fish, but to show them what sick pigs looked like and what their product looked like that they could sell them, right? It was just a marketing. And now everybody that went to these meetings had access to a telephone number, so if they had the sick pig or fish and they needed good products, they could get it. The veterinarians who were invited to the meeting also had access to quality. The company itself picked up two or three clients in local input supply stores that they could sell medicines to. They've never done this before. Nobody ever did this outreach. So they had access to all this free training suddenly. And then we picked up another company who said they would do it. And they did it in another province. And they sold out their entire supply of vaccine in one weekend after the training. What this did for the folks in the province, especially at the production, is they started having confidence that they could raise their pigs. So they were starting to invest because now they knew they had access to technical assistance. They knew they had access to good vaccines and medicines. So they started investing. And so through that private, and we never paid the private folks to come out to do the training. Our subsidy, you know, this is USAID gives us money. It's a subsidy. How we use it has to be wise. Our subsidy was, we would pay $25 to rent a generator to run the LCD projector. That was it. So these two companies started coming in. I'll tell this real quick because it's a really neat story. The two companies came in. One Saturday morning, the first company calls our project and says, we don't want to do any more of your work for you. We're not going to do any more training. And my team called me and said, God, it took us 3 months to do this. What are we going to do? I said, we'll meet them on Monday morning. We met them on Monday morning. The problem was they had talked to the other guys who used to work for the first company, and they found out that they sold all their products out in one weekend after they gave the training. And they said, if you give us all your training, we'll work with you. Otherwise, we're not going to do it. They want all our training. We said, no. USAID would never allow us to do this. Now, as you know, in development, a lot of companies do this. I hire one company to do all the training. But we decided we wanted competition. The next time this first company came back to do, the next time they came to do training, they brought hats and they brought books and they brought pens and they gave a full day instead of a half a day of training, and the competition went up like that. We have 14 companies that do the training now, right? And this in an environment where all the donors said there is no technical assistance in the provinces, and they're still saying this. They just said it just 2 or 3 weeks ago. The EU did a study and they said, oh, there's no business development services. So we got the skills up and we started building the relationships because people were starting to produce. Once they started to produce, we put them in buses, different people from different areas, put them in buses and took them to different provinces and showed them new traders. So once they had commercial access, they had more traders to go to. They didn't have to sell to a local trader who they thought would cheat them, so they could triangulate prices. They had good medicines. We introduced them to more input suppliers. We introduced them to transporters. We introduced them to everybody in the supply chain, all the way into the market. Now I can move a little bit faster. They had poor business practices. After we get a critical mass, after we had about 1,000 or so clients, we could have business forums. We can pull them together in fish, pigs, and clay tiles, and we'd invite people to come make presentations, and we'd take the leading enterprises, and they'd get up and tell what they've done to become successful. That was the best medicine for them to have. They had old technology. So we would take, eventually we had a group who were actually very good, and our team was very good at spotting them. We would take them to Vietnam, to Thailand, to Malaysia, and there was two reasons for it. One, to show them better technology and processes, and the other, to show them good governance. We always mixed the private sector and the government together. And at first, that didn't work very well. And even now, when we have our meetings, we always leave on Sundays. On Saturdays, we always invite them to the office. They just left last Saturday. We had one to Vietnam. The government sits at one end. The private sector sits at the other end of the tables. And they don't talk to each other. By the time they come back, they're friends. They understand the business. The government guys are totally frustrated because they see how much authority the Thai and the Vietnamese government officers have to develop economically in the provinces. So they come back very frustrated, which is good, because then they start advocating for their interests. And they've created a lot of friendships, so they actually start protecting the private sector and advocating for the private sector. This resulted, over a period of time, we didn't push associations or formal groups, but they naturally formed because people would take their pigs to the market, and they would get slaughtered on the highways in unofficial fees, right? The police would stop them, and they were having all kinds of business environment issues. And then the political elite saw the pig business and the fish business is very good, so they decided to put restrictions on where pigs and fish could be sold. So we had a lot of reasons to advocate, and not a lot of ways to do it. So we started with informal working groups that they would form, and we helped facilitate some advocacy training through local NGOs. Nobody got paid to come to meetings. We were known as the Bread and Water Project. So we would bring bread and water and bananas, and that was it. And some big, you know, the companies who were really good, not the companies, these were all small family businesses, they wouldn't come in initially. They said, well, you aren't going to give us anything. I'm not coming, because they'd seen how donors operate, and they're just waiting for things to be given. But eventually they come back, and they become our leading entrepreneurs. So we began, after we got the production going, we had market linkages. People were selling. They were making money. They're at this point, they can almost meet market demand for pigs and fish. They still had no confidence presenting issues. So one of the things, and this is real technical assistance that we offered, that USAID offered, we provided some strategic communication workshops. so that they could get some practice. We took the leaders in the communities and the working groups and gave them some training, 20 people at a time. We did four trainings of how to present it, how to study an issue, how to present it to the government, how to ask for results. We also invited some government folks to taught them how to listen and how to respond to issues. So the strategic communications workshops were very, very beneficial. But still, there's no formal means to solve business issues. So we actually started having some very soft meetings in the provinces and at the national level where we'd invite 200 or 300 people at business forums. We would facilitate it and invite people to come. We'd have 200 or 300 people come, both at the province and the national level, and we would just present issues. And it, at first, you know, the government doesn't like it. They didn't like it. But as we took these international trips and these local trips, they got used to the idea and they started advocating for the private sector, and they would listen. Okay, so this is like 3 years ago. They hadn't gone full speed yet. And there was real no national dialogue on business issues. There was one business forum that the IFC had supported, but it was government controlled. And they only talked about what they wanted to talk about, and they weren't really interested in these rural issues like pigs and fish and tiles or honey or resin or anything else at this point. So we really focused on getting people to talk about business. So we would have radio talk shows, and we'd invite the government, provincial, mostly provincial and the national government folks, to talk about business and to talk about regulation. And it was a radio call-in show, so people could call in and ask questions. So we got people used to the idea of talking about business. They'd never done this before. And we also had televised panels. But the televised panels was very difficult to get the government to come because it was showing their face, and it was very difficult. We did it once. The rest of the time, it was just private sector talking about their problems, which was good because then everybody got to say, well, I got the same problems. And then the next step came along. We started formalizing this. The government then, at the national level, at the local level, kind of a formalized working groups was okay, and then we had some associations, and they were okay at the provincial level. But the national level said, well, there was no anonymous way to present issues, and no one was really of the inkling to stand up and bring up an issue because the tall spike gets hammered. So An innovative way to do that is to have a cooperative or an association, and then you're anonymous. So they actually came up with these ideas. We had a policy with MSME that we did not promote associations or cooperatives. In the first 3 years, we had one. My team always said, if you want us to have associations, we'll go out and form 100 of them tomorrow, because they knew the philosophy that we had. But we've seen this before. The donors have done this a lot, and they all fail. As soon as the donors leave, they fail because there was no leadership. They didn't have a way to provide services. There was no mechanism to collect fees. So we formed these, and then that gave them a legal basis to bring issues to the national government. But they didn't really have a habit of this, so we started facilitating. We'd invite the government officers to come to the provinces and present issues and to have that dialogue. And these were workshops, these were forums, and advising on laws that existed at the time. And there were also very few opportunities for the government to show their commitment. And so we wanted to formalize this. We started local products trade fairs. If any of you have been to the Midwest, where I come from Iowa, we have county fairs. Yeah, the county fairs, right? Now, we don't have demolition derbies yet in Cambodia. that's not coming yet, but maybe someday. But those are the highlight of the county fairs. But we have we hire a company. This is a direct subsidy. We hire a company to put this on, and they charge fees for the booths. We give 60 booths away for free to MSME clients like the cooperatives, honey producers, the resin producers, the fish raisers that actually come and set up because they want to sell fish fingerlings, and fish fingerling raisers now provide almost all the technical assistance in the fish sector because they want to sell fish fingerlings. So they'll show people how to dig their ponds, take care of their ponds. We have ponds that used to produce 700 kilos, and today they produce 10,000 kilos, right, in a season, in 1 year. Because they can get two or three productions out of one pond. So the local trade fairs were very, very good, and the government ran them. Actually, we partnered with them, and they ran them. And the second year we had these, the Minister of Agriculture, the very first one, invited all of the provincial directors to come. So we had all these big Land Cruisers, and 29 or 23 people with all their bodyguards coming to this trade fair event, and they sat in front, and the Minister of Agriculture said, you know, USAID and MSME shouldn't be doing these. You should be doing them. I want to see next year you doing these things. So for the last 2 years, it's been really easy for us, right, because he understood and he realized how valuable these were. We'd have 100 booths, and we'd have 20 or 30,000 people a night showing up. And, of course, I'll show you the team picture later, but our team is kind of like a bunch of hams, and they sing. So this has been an opportunity for a real good team building for our team. They get up on Friday night at about 9 o'clock. We give some plaques out to the really good people in supply chains. And we give them plaques and tell everybody what great people they are. And then our team sings a song or two. So it's quite a bit of fun, and you're welcome to come. Some of you have been, some of you DEIers have been there. They're a lot of fun. Anyway, so I don't know if I'm going too fast. I guess we'll have questions and answers. I have a tendency to go too fast because I know this so well. The results have been very positive. And we went from zero in 2005 and almost zero in 2008 to 62 formal working groups with 2,100 members now. And I'm not joking. When we went to these villages, they would not talk to each other, and no one was raising pigs or fish, and it was miserable. 13 agriculture cooperatives with 899 members, and we ourselves have helped facilitate 188 events where business issues were discussed with 268 officials. This is a large number. Nobody does this in Cambodia. No project has ever done this. Everybody's still focused on production. So linking a supply chain is quite great. And 5,800 business persons, some of those are double because they go to different ones. And we got the government to support us. And when we started in 2008, we had this meeting at the Ministry of Agriculture. And USAID's Director of Economic Growth was there, Reed Ashelman, me, my team leader, and the lawyer we hired to come out and help us encourage the government to write better regulations. And the head of the Department of Animal Health came out and said, listen, we're the government, and that's the private sector. We write the laws. They follow the laws. We don't need their input into our laws, and we don't need USAID to help facilitate conversations between the private sector and the government. You got it? And Reed looked at me, you know, afterwards, Reed looked at me, and he says, I think you got your work cut out for you. I said, we'll make it. And we did. That guy's still there, but now he actually opened up a trade fair for us, and you know, he's one of the team. But they've actually initiated 35 events on their own, and we help facilitate because we know who the private sector are, and we invite them. But that will continue without us because now they have those relationships. And the private sector can now go right to the minister and have those discussions, and they know the people in the national and provincial level, so they have these discussions on their own. There's active solicitation of public comments. Most of those 35 events are before the regulations are designed, which is the opposite of what the guy told us in 2008. So it's been very successful. And the officers actually go to the province. Of course, they come to us first, and they say, can you give us per diems, and you can pay for hotels, and give us transportation? And we say no. We have to. We don't do it to the private sector, and we're not going to do it to the government. We buy meals. Usually we buy lunch. You know, if they have a meal, if they invite 50 private sector people to a meeting like that, we'll buy lunch because that's a good thing for us to do. But we don't pay transportation. We don't pay for the hotels. We have to stop that. That's not sustainable at all. So what do we have now? Well, we've got from almost zero, right, Marina? We have 4,300 swine farmers with an average of 26 pigs. Pigs is not a sexy business, but it's a huge source of protein for Cambodians. And 26 pigs doesn't sound like a lot. Some are 600 pig farms, and some are 10 pig farms. I've got some widow women who started with two pigs, They went to one of our trainings. Now they have 20 or 30 pigs. Now, it doesn't sound like much. They can make $1,000 a year or more because they can turn these pigs over every 3 months. So they can make pretty good money, send their children to school, buy houses, build houses, and buy motorbikes. There's 802 aquaculture farms now with two or more ponds. And to put that in perspective, in Spy Ring Province, there was a USDA project that worked in pigs and fish from 2005 to 2007. In 2007, they left. We couldn't work down there because they were giving all the pigs away. They're giving all the fish away. They dug the ponds. They gave the pumps away. It's like our team said, well, you know, we can't go down there and do this. So we waited for them to leave. And when we got down there, I said, okay, let's go cherry pick them up. Let's go cherry pick them up, get the best ones, and start working. We couldn't find any. They had all gone out of business. Just a month after CRS had left, Catholic Relief Services, who was running the project, left. Everybody's done. And there wasn't a good farmer in the whole bunch, so we had to start from scratch. So 802 fish ponds producing, I don't have the number, tons and tons of fish. More than $12 million have been invested in the roof tile business. We have 476 persons working full-time in honey, and it used to be a part-time occupation where they would find the honey combs and they would kill the bees with a raid and take the honey, put it in a dirty old bucket and go on the side of the road and sell it. And now they're filtering it. We've linked them up with processors, and they no longer have to import honey from Thailand and Vietnam and call it Cambodian. We have 135,000 people in our 12 provinces who have access to clean, safe drinking water now. And we estimated we have about 50,000 new rural jobs, so people don't have to migrate to Phnom Penh to find work. I can tell you a ton of really great stories. I got 7,000 great stories of successful people. I've only done this for the presentation. I've listed about 13 or 14 of the things we do. I haven't put everything we do up here because we also do savings groups. We've done some business training. We've tried a lot of experiments. We've tried a lot of things to see if they'd stick, try to get the private sector to do some things. It doesn't always work. Sometimes it does. But we try a lot of things. We've been very pragmatic with our approach. But these are the things that I've talked about today, the things that we've done. And I've tried to put some nice pictures of the Cambodian people because they're lovely people. And then this is the best people I know in Cambodia. So it's kind of a quick seven-year rundown of what we've done, and I'll be glad to take it from there.